Welcome here. If you're going to be an effective mountain climber, there's two viewpoints you need to keep in mind. The one is what we would call the macro viewpoint, and the other the micro. Macro means the overarching picture. That's where we're headed, those peaks out there, 3 miles distant. The micro viewpoint is very localized. Where am I setting my feet? Right? Both of those are things that we must keep aware in our cognitive whatever. If we're going to be an effective mountain climber. Same with school teaching. We need to be aware of the macro stuff, like Brother John has been addressing, but this would represent a micro subject, something that's very specific. You may be wondering, why now? Why are we looking at achievement tests now? I don't have to worry about them till April. Well, I don't think you're coming back in April, so we decided to see, what do we say, hit while the iron's hot or hit while the cat is near or something like that. This disclaimer, this is about scores. This is about rating ability and performance. It was either Warren Buffett or Joe Beiler, I'm not sure which, said, winners know that games are not won by watching the scoreboard. Joseph, you didn't say, okay, that was Warren Buffett. So that's not the most important thing. The score is not the most important thing. But nonetheless, they do give indicators like that dashboard in your car. What's really going on is something that we should be concerned about. Achievement tests are about what's really going on academically in the mind of the student. And when you think about concept, conceive, all that is internally, right? And it's a little bit hard to get a dipstick on it. And that's why achievement tests are so interesting. They become somewhat my favorite sandbox. And that happened in about 45 minutes. The school board came to me one day and said, we've been watching achievement test scores in your classroom since you started teaching, and every year they slipped a little bit. Interesting. They should have been concerned about that, and I did feel like I was working for a board that cared for me. It was a great relationship, a good, valid thing for them to come to me about, and so I decided I'm going to understand achievement tests. So instead of spending one evening with Reader's Digest, I spent it with an examiner's manual to learn about achievement tests. And I learned probably 75% of what I'll be telling you today in that evening. That's the kind of thing you can do too. You can decide you're going to take an examiner's manual home, and you can sit down with it in your living room and get yourself oriented. Help yourself if you would. So what's going on with achievement tests? I think you as a teacher need to know what and why you're doing with the thing. I wouldn't get very far by asking the crowd, everybody, to put their little pinky into their ear. It's senseless, it's useless, there's no good reason to do so. So I'm not going to ask you to do that, but I think that we shouldn't be asking you to do things that don't make sense. And achievement tests need to make sense. And they're not making sense to everybody. As one board chairman that I talked to not so long ago, he said, our school just quit giving them because nobody knew what they were doing, nobody could read the story that they were telling, and so we pulled out our little pinky and we can use it for other things. Well, that was one approach. I think we can do better than that, right? So this topic, we're going to address four basic areas of consideration. What are they? Why do we give them? Which tests should be used, and how do we administrate them? And I do want to say this before we dive into some of this micro stuff. I believe that achievement tests work. I've been around them enough to know that there's a direct correlation between what a student can do and what the achievement test says. I believe in them. I do believe there are such things as tummy aches. I do believe there are such things as test phobia. And I do believe that that happens on achievement test days. But for the most part, I believe that achievement tests are worthwhile and trustworthy. So when we're finished with this session, my objective is to have you all possess a better understanding of what's going on with achievement tests. And I want you to have a document that you can pull out in April and look at, especially at the section of the different scores, so that you can read the story that the achievement tests are telling, not on this pinky-in-the-ear level of understanding. We want you to have a sense of worthwhile work, what's happening. All right, so what are achievement tests? Achievement tests are standardized tests. In other words, they're not part or parcel of any particular curriculum set, such as Rod and Staff, Christian Light, Abeka Bob Jones. They've been devised independently. The tests that most of us use are the California Achievement Test, the 1970 edition. McGraw-Hill actually developed that test, and then California, I believe, sponsored that test. So the goal is to measure academic performance in math, reading, and language, not science, history, music, not those other content-based subjects. It's more the skill-based subjects. That's what we mean by standardized test, back to that again, in that it is not part of any other curriculum set. It's also a comprehensive test. In other words, it covers those three areas, math, reading, and language, which is recognized everywhere by educators worldwide, as this is what we're trying to do with our academic endeavors, these three areas, right? It's also norms-based or reference-based testing. And this is where we really start getting into roads perhaps you haven't traveled before. In other words, what we mean by norms-based is there is no typical percentage score computed. In other words, we do not say that this student scored a 95%. In other words, they got 95% of the problems correct. Put that away, lock it in a chest for this discussion, because that's where it belongs when we're talking about achievement tests, because it's an entirely different animal. Entirely different animal. What's developed is a percentile. A percentile score is ranking the student. If you would imagine with me a ladder with 100 rungs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, what we're doing with the score on a norms-based test is we're setting each student on a particular rung on that ladder. Most of the students are going to be on one rung, rung number 50. That's right. So if you are a 50 percentile, you're right in the middle of the pack. Half of the people that normally take this test are above you, and the other half are below you, right? Quite different than a 95% on a criteria-based test, say, on do we understand how to operate with fractions, okay? This is fundamental to understanding achievement tests. We're not working with criteria-based tests. We're working with norms-based tests. Now, it is true that the test looks the same. And that's part of where some of the confusion and frustration comes in. It looks like a criteria-based test. And content-wise, it is essentially a criteria-based. It looks like a similar to what, you know, math tests that comes out of your rod and staff curriculum looks similar to the achievement test, sort of, kind of, right? But the way that it's scored is where we're talking about a completely different animal, and you don't try to overlay the two, okay, because it's not to be done that way. Norms-based test will give questions that the students are not, it's not expected that the students are able to answer. And I think maybe this was said before here, that it's kind of like a pile, like a loose pile that you know you're not going to get to the top, but you just want to see how far you can run up it, okay? And so that process of the student losing traction in their ability to do it, that's new and unfamiliar, even to us teachers perhaps. But that is exactly what's going to happen on the achievement test. There's going to be questions that they do not have the academic ability, they do not have the academic traction to get to the top of the hill and get 100%. That's not the way the test was designed, even though it kind of looks the same as a criteria-based test. Is this clear? It's fascinating how these norms tables have been developed. You see, if we're going to have a norms-based test, then we have to have a norms set somewhere back there in history. Well, McGraw-Hill had 208,000, I believe, students that were tested, and then all that was compiled into norms tables. So when our students in 2025 take the achievement test, they will be being compared to those 208,000 back in California. Well, of course, there's different levels of testing and different forms and all that, but that's what they're really being compared to, and that is where their score is coming from. All right, let's go next to why do we give achievement tests. There are valid reasons for giving them. Academic development is sort of hard to see. It's a little hard to quantify. It's a little bit like growing grass. We built a new church and school building in our community recently, and we put a yard around it just this summer. And it took a long time for the grass to grow, it seemed like to me. But it's growing now, but I'm not really sure how fast it's growing. It seems like they've mowed it a few times. I'm not sure. I'm not a trustee. But, you know, it's kind of a nebulous project a little bit like that when we're working with developing academic ability. So, reasons for testing to measure students' level of mastery of concepts and skills appropriate to their grade level. Educators everywhere believe that A fourth grader ought to be able to be proficient to this level in, again, math fractions or understanding sentence structure. Okay, so it's that standard that has been developed that's generally accepted that is being used to determine a score for what a student should be able to do on achievement tests. So we want to measure their level of mastery appropriate to their grade level. Secondly, we want to help parents, we want to help teachers, we want to help boards identify both general and specific strengths and weaknesses in individual student knowledge and the school average, right? So if a board is minding their business and they see that, you know, we're really weak on reading here, right? Well, they can take appropriate action. This is an indicator, a dipstick, if you will, to both individuals and the school as a whole. Thirdly, to promote academic achievement and responsibility in our schools. There should be a measure of pressure felt on achievement test day that we want our students to do our best. That's because we are measuring academic achievement. But the other part of this, I said responsibility, to promote responsibility in our schools. You see, achievement tests are a third party that's sort of analyzing what's happening in our schools. And that third party, not Rodden staff, not Christian Light, not whatever curriculum you're using, they're the ones that are saying how effective our learning is, right? And our schools can then be accountable and have increased accountability because of this third party that's coming in and analyzing what's actually going on, right? We'll talk more about that in just a bit. But a fourth reason is to provide a benchmark of achievement. Here's where we were at the end of second grade. Here's where we were at the end of third grade. Here's where we were at the end of fourth grade. And we can actually quantify that annual progression. There's some other reasons. Your state may require it. Many of the states here in the West, we're, I guess I would say, gloriously free of involvement of the government. But that can make us sloppy, right? I think there's coming a day where there's probably going to be a knock on the door at your school, and I think we're going to have to give account. And at that point, what I intend to do if I answer the knock, I'm going to our school files and I'm going to the achievement test records. That's where I'm headed right away. And that actually did happen right here in Oregon, in Salem, which is the capital of this state. Some of the Mennonites from this congregation went to court session, and I wish they were here to tell you about it. But essentially what was happening is the public school was suing the state for allowing private education. The defense for the private education people, the defense, basically, it can be summarized in this. He said, since when do the losers tell the winners what to do? Now, how do you make a statement like that? Well, he substantiated it by achievement tests. That's what. Right? Now, I'm not here to say we won. I'm not here to say that. But I'm here to say that part of responsibility in running a school is to be sure that we're doing it responsibly and that we can prove that we're doing it responsibly. Maybe some other stories yet briefly. There was an educator that came to our congregation in Washington and eventually joined. He had been a public school teacher all his life, and he was old enough to be my dad. I had a number of years. We had breakfast together once a month, thoroughly enjoyed it. He on his way to school, me on my way to school. But in his journey into the Mennonite subculture, he kind of asked this question, not quite the way that I'll ask it here, but almost. He said, how do you Mennonites know that you're able to run your own schools? I mean, don't you know you're supposed to be out there farming squash? And so I said, well, we try, and you know, God blesses. And he said, yes, but do you even do third-party testing? And I said, well, yeah, matter of fact, we do. And I made arrangements for him to go to our school files one afternoon, open the drawer, and riffle through the achievement test results. The drawer went shut. He turned around and asked a question that any good educator would at that point. He said, I need to see your curriculum. All right? In other words, he'd become a believer. Bang. That fast. He was not a lightweight fellow. He actually was a heavy hitter in education in the state of Washington. So happened that he sat on several boards for curriculum development. And through him, curriculum from Anabaptists got to those types of meetings, right? Because of why? Because of the achievement test results. Would it have had that result if down at the bottom it would have said produced by Christian Light Education? Mm-mm. You see what we're trying to communicate does have effects, doesn't it? Right, your school needs to be taking achievement tests. It needs to have those in its file. I believe that pretty firmly. All right, this story yet. I had taught a student who was, I believe, 17 years old, and she just completed the 7th grade rod and staff math book, and she got her annual report card average of 74%. Well, I think maybe I related some of this story before. Let's just finish it off. We redid the 7th grade math book rather than run her into 8th grade because I knew that if we went to 8th grade, I would be pulling her the whole way. I would be one tired Sherpa. Well, at the end of redoing 7th grade math book, she had gained 167, I believe it was, maybe 3, I can't remember, ADSS points on her achievement tests, right? And that qualifies as more than 3 good years, good solid years of education, right? I felt really blessed to have that statistical evidence to validate that decision, because the parents had wanted her to jolly well have a good year because she's 18 and she can hardly even pass a 7th grade math book, right? Well, I would say we jolly well had a good year. Another thing, yet I would say, one of the things that is done with achievement tests, you can get them scored by Alan Troyer, CatForms Testing Service. How many of you are aware of that service, right? Looks like it's almost 50%. Mennonite brother who has been scoring achievement tests for 25 years, he developed a computer program and a student response form that you use his response form when you're doing the test. Then you mail them into him. He feeds them through a scanner, and it's lovely. It's very lovely, especially if you've ever hand-scored achievement test results. And then he gives you back something like this. You got it, right? That is his result paper. The amount of time it would take for you to generate something that beautiful and that informative would be quite a project, right? But he has written his own software to be able to get this done. Okay, back to what I was saying. He generally asks you to write down what curriculum you're using. What curriculum are you using for math? That's not on this report, by the way. What curriculum are you using for language and so on? There's statistical evidence here, the blessing of the Lord, in that the Anabaptist-produced curriculums are essentially neck-on-neck with the big heavy hitters of curriculum producers, right? I hope you get the significance of that statement. In other words, you can use Anabaptist-produced curriculum and know, not because I told you so, but because the achievement tests developed by McGraw-Hill in 1968, 69, and 70 have declared it thus, that the curriculum that our people that hang garage doors and operate farms, the curriculum that they write works, right? And to God be the glory. I don't think that, there's enough results. Alan Troyer has scored, I think I'm correct in saying, nearly 200,000 tests. The last I asked him, I think it was a slightly over 180,000, but that was a while ago. But it's really not correct to say we're going to use an evangelical-produced curriculum because of better results. It's just not there. Now, there's some wobble, right? So the burden of proof is on you for choosing to use, I'll just say it, Baptist curriculum, right? In fact, I'm getting into dingle weeds, but not really. I read in a Baptist-produced paper, it was a publication, a scholarly publication that was talking about Mennonites. Did you know the Baptists write about Mennonites? Well, the Mennonites write about Baptists, so turnabout's fair play. That article was saying that if the Mennonites are going to be able to operate their own schools effectively, and have it do what they want it to do, in other words, communicate their values, they say that it will, it said, I can show this to you, I don't have it to hold up in front, but they said that it will take curriculum aligned with their values, right? And so I think they're actually a little bit surprised that we choose a textbook that has a warplane on the front, or that we give them 10 sentences to pick adjectives out of, and each one of those sentences is lauding and exalting the U.S. military, right? I should be talking to your school boards, but let's stop, think, right? All right, moving on. Which achievement tests? This is not on your handout. The most common achievement test that is used in our circles is the California 1970 edition achievement test. It depends on the method that you use to administrate the test, if you hand score, if you use Troyer to score, but it ends up costing approximately $7 or $8 a student per year. Christian Light does secure the reproduction or rights to reproduce this curriculum, continue to print it, these tests, I should say. Every 10 years, they have to renew that. Some years, it's been a little bit questionable about whether we'd actually be able to do that. But so far, Christian Light has been always able to secure the copyright to be able to continue to print them. There are some other tests, such as the IWA test to basic skills. I think that's being used some in Plain communities, but not very much, certainly less than 10%. There's a Stanford achievement test and so on. Also, there's another achievement test that Mr. Troyer, Allen, is trying to develop on his own because of the wobbly relationship with McGraw-Hill and being able to reprint tests. His is called Academic Progress Test, and while I applaud his efforts, he simply won't be able to achieve the stature of the California Achievement Test, maybe not even within his lifetime. All right, how to do achievement tests. When you administrate achievement tests, teachers, I would suggest that you talk to someone who gave them before. Maybe this again is not on your handout, but talk to someone who gave them before. Perhaps a previous teacher. When I first gave achievement tests, our school board chairman had been a school teacher, and he helped me through that. Also, read the examiner's manual. It will tell you all you need to know. And also, if you use a CAT form scoring service, they will send you a how-to sheet just full of practical instructions. Read it. Do it. And again, I repeat that one evening spent with this kind of material, what you get from Troyer or your examiner's manual, will put you on the map. And then, of course, know the materials needed. You'll need a pencil, and you'll need an eraser. You might need a second pencil. You'll need student response forms. You'll need the achievement test booklets and so on. Not real hard to get oriented by people who are used to getting oriented to things. I would also suggest, as far as the how-to, test approximately the same time year to year. I personally like to see the tests given pretty close to the end of the year, just before the school trip. That's my own little preference. The school trip then becomes something that we do after the heavy lifting is behind us type of a scenario. So we're talking beginning of May, something like that. But in other words, you don't say, well, let's just knock them out at the beginning of this year. No, because we're trying to take them the same time of the year. If you take them April, or May, whatever, well, then it makes more consistent results, right? Within the last 10 days, I would say, is a good time to take achievement tests. All right, where do the scores go? Well, the scores need to go to the boards. It's the board's responsibility, I believe, to ultimately the one that needs to be interpreting the story that's being told by achievement tests. I also think parents have a right and maybe responsibility for these test results. But I do also believe that they should not be just handed over to the parents because, again, the score, as we've been talking, is easily misunderstood. So the parents need some coaching to interpret the score. Our community has sort of gotten into the practice of having a registration meeting just before school starts where all the patrons come, and we go over this and that and the other thing. And one of the things that we go over, one of the this and that's, is achievement tests. And each parent is given their students' achievement test results from the previous year. And with that, we also give them a little bit of instructions about how to interpret it. And parents have learned to appreciate that and I think it's a good practice, a good way to do it. I do not think they should go to the students for several reasons, probably two. The one is that the students won't really understand what they're seeing anyway. And number two, they're going to get drunk on the data because one of these grades here is called the grade equivalent, right? Now, one of the things that we can tell by achievement tests is that we are generally doing better than what the public schools were when these were developed. So our students, we said 50 was average, right? Many of our schools' average are 70, 80. I've even taught at a school that was consistently in the 90s of the percentile. All right? Again, statistical evidence of the blessing of the Lord. I know of no other place to get it that directly. But what does that do to the one score called grade equivalent? Well, it puts them up there like in 13th grade when they're a sixth grader. All right? And students will get drunk on that. That's not a good thing for them to have. And, of course, who else needs to have the information? Well, I already said, put it in a file drawer, right? Every student in your school should have a student file. It's part of running a good, solid school program, and it may just save the day, as it did here in Oregon in the early 90s. All right, let's go to the different types of scores and what they mean. I'm trying to bail it tight enough that I can open it up for questions and discussion. All right, we have already introduced the percentile, didn't we? That's where you have the ladder with the 100 rungs. The percentile is listed. Let's just look on that on this paper. Right, the percentile would be recorded here somewhere for sure. I think that's all percentile. Yeah, where it says national percentile, third line down, right? So anything above a 50 is above national average. Anything below a 50 is below. The total battery or the total tests all put together, this student was a 49. Now, that's a great number for an example paper, right? And let's then look at grade equivalency. That one doesn't take a lot of explaining because, I mean, who doesn't understand grade equivalent? Grade, you know, what grade are you equal to? You're performing as well as, well, this student right down here tells us that he was in grade 8.7, which means the seventh month of eighth grade. Okay, that decimal actually means something, the seventh month of eighth grade. All right, so 8.7 and his grade equivalent test total is 8.6. Well, that aligns, right? Because he is a 49 percentile after all, right? Okay. This sample does not really indicate a very well-performing eighth grader in our schools, however. Right? This is actually a weak student, right? And that's just not my idea. Because these gray bars, beside the ones that have color, are CATFORMS testing service, very own norms tables, developed by communities similar to your own. Tests that Allen has scored in the last 25 years, right? So this student, compared to other students, the total score, he's only 11th percentile. This is not a very good performing student compared to other students in our playing communities, right? Do you find that intriguing? Wow. I like to see numbers like that. Well, not that low, but you know what I mean. Numbers that quantify academic development and academic progress. That's just terrifically intriguing. Maybe this will become your favorite sandbox too. Right, again, this about grade equivalent, I don't think that we ought to be leaning on grade equivalent very much because it's misunderstood. Again, parents are going to reach for grade equivalent because it's the easiest understood of all scores. And it will artificially make us feel good because it's not quite the whole story. The other thing about grade equivalent is, that should be mentioned, is it probably is helpful in the lower grades. I'm talking about grades 1 to 3. Because the longer we go, the more the gap increases between way our schools tend to perform versus the norms tables. So you can use grade equivalent perhaps in the lower grades. If you're trying to determine if a student, the pass-fail situation, and it is correct to go to achievement tests to help make that decision, but beyond the third grade, probably not so helpful. Right, since most of my relating to school was on the upper grades, I almost never look at grade equivalent. It's percentile that I tend to look at a lot. And then also the ADSS, Achievement Development Scale Score. Before we do that, let's knock out stainine. Stainine is the same as percentile, except instead of being 1 to 99 or 1 to 100, instead of having 100 rungs on the ladder, it only has 9. All right, so it's kind of a combination of standard 9. All right, so it's percentile with the accuracy removed. So I don't look at stainine either. Right, but some people say, well, no, you can't get that accurate. Well, this is statisticians' talk. Statisticians, they're interesting folks, but they argue about these things and get opinionated and pound pulpits about whether or not you should use percentile versus stainine. This is statisticians' tools. All right. Well, I just walk away from it and say, have your fun. I don't care about stainine. Let's go to Achievement Development Scale Score. This one I think is extremely fascinating. This is a three-digit number from, I think it runs approximately from 100 to 900. It measures a student's skill, consistent for all levels, all forms of the CAT test, and you can use it to track yearly progress. So it is on here. Right here it says scale score, right? Well, that number by itself doesn't mean a whole lot, but it means a whole lot when you compare it to other years. Now, one of the things that I don't like this sample is that it says grade equivalent up here, and I already told you why I don't like grade equivalent, especially in the eighth grade. Right? If you talk to Troyer, tell him, we don't want grade equivalent here, we want ADSS, right? That's what we do at our school, and he can easily stroke his keyboard and out it comes. Okay, so ADSS, yes. If you gain 50 ADSS points a year, that's a great year. Good, solid year. 50-point gain. Okay, many of our first graders are entering between 250 and 300, right? We like to see them exiting the 10th grade, approximately 700, at least 750. I've seen students that exit the 10th grade over 800. They're very, very capable students. So it ends up that if you gain 50 points a year, you have a real good solid year's worth of education. 30, well, not too shabby. At least it didn't go backwards. I've seen that too from my own students, right? It's kind of humbling, but it happens. So when I say that that individual gained 167 or whatever it was, ADSS points, by redoing a math book, the same thing. You see why that's significant? That's over 3 years worth of education in 1 year, right? What I have the last half of my teaching, let's say, or I didn't do this the first years, but well, the first thing that I would do when I went to prepare for school, you know, that first time you come back to school and the classroom's empty and nasty feeling because it's all dead, no decorations, no students, no nothing. The first thing I would always do is go for the achievement test results, and I would make a list of this is last year, right? It was kind of like old business. And I'd write down how many points did they gain, every student, how many points did they gain, and then I'd average it up, right? And if it was above 50, well, then I went and bought myself the biggest donut that I could buy, right, and ate it happily, right? And many years I didn't get a donut, but evidently I didn't need it too badly. Not so long ago, in our community, we switched from rod and staff to CLE, or we finished the transition, I should say. And it's really interesting to see what happened to achievement test scores. It wasn't madly different, but it was probably the best set of achievement tests that we ever got this last year. And you can, through Troyer's program, he gives you summaries for your whole school, not just the student. And so it's very helpful for your school board and maybe for you to know what is the percentile of our school? How much was the ADSS gain for our school? As a school board member, I always made a list of all the students, and we looked at that. Here's how many ADSS points were gained. Right, I'm just about finished. I would like to say this yet, that there's a whole pack of papers. This is from CATform Testing Service that I've been referencing throughout. This is like 30 pages that will get you oriented to achievement tests and what he can do for you. Right, and I did not print this out for everybody, but it's got all sorts of goodies in here. Right, I am instead going to put a clipboard back there that if you want it, you just put your email address here, okay, and I'll email it to you. Fair enough? Understood? All right. I'll try to be sure that gets back there. Right, in the time remaining, which is, what, 10 minutes or so, what would you like to ask or comment on? Any stakes that you'd like to pound a little deeper? I want to get the highlighter out. Here's your chance. Yes, sir. Yes, you're absolutely right. You have to go back and look, and again, Troyer does that for you. But you actually have to do that with the other scores too. If your student tests, say you are going to stick with grade equivalent despite its inherent dangers, you can at least tell this: did they advance 1 year? If they tested last year at 7.3, this next year they better test at 8.3. So there is value in the grade equivalent score.
Does the whole school paper have the comparative ADSS on it or not?
No, but a little bit of diligence will get that for you. Yes, over here.
Our schools that I was working with in Wisconsin, we stuck with the Iowa
test to basic skills. Right.
And they had a norms for private Christian schools.
That was different?
Right. They had the public school norms, and they had the private Christian school norms in their results. And that was really eye-opening because our schools had the sweat to stay in the, we were used to norms that made us look really good.
Right. Mm-hmm. When the California Achievement Test was developed, the Catholic schools were used to get that private school sector, but they were mixed in with everybody. And I forget what it was, less than 20% of the norms work tables were developed from Catholic schools. Now, I do want to say this yet, I told you about that man that educator that I allowed to open up the file drawer and look in it. He said he wondered, do we write our own achievement tests? And I said, no. I said, we don't write it. Well, he said, what do you use? And I told him, we use a 1970 edition of the California Achievement Test, feeling a bit bashful that we use something that old. And at that point, he just about fell over because he said, I want you to know something. He said, they were the very best achievement test or standardized tests that were ever written in North America. That's basically what he said exactly verbatim, as close as I can reconstruct it right now. And I said, really? Tell me more. Well, he said, and you know this to be true, states can't get done tinkering with what level students should perform at, right? And so they have to keep on rewriting tests. I lived in Washington State before Montana for what? I believe it was 15 years. During the 15 years that I lived in Montana, they had four different standardized achievement tests. Four. You can't change that fast and call it standardized, my friends. Right? Yes.
He went, filled in the dots across corner, back and forth, all the way through, and he got
Yeah, there we go. I'm going to have to put on my statistician hat, as much as I hate to do that. But statistics are that way. Because statistics, the way that this test is written, they're all multiple choice. And so a monkey could score at least a 25% accuracy rate, right? But that doesn't tell me anything more than this story. Suppose that let's fill a football stadium with 117,000 people. Let's give them all a quarter, right? And let's say, all right, flip the quarter and everybody gets a tail, sits down. Well, half of the 117,000 are going to sit down the first flip, right? Flip again. Half remaining. You're going to have people statistically there that get heads, 15, 20 times in a row. That's the way statistics are. And what he proved is he happened to be one of those guys that was left standing. That's all. Yes?
I was just going to ask if you know about the Rod Staff one, the Rod Staff achievement test, how that correlates.
Great question. It's not an achievement test. That's a placement test. It was never designed to be an achievement test. It was designed, just like Christian Light has the same thing, a diagnostic test, CLE calls it. Placement test is what... I think I'm saying that right. If anyone else is here from Rod and Staff, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was not designed to be an achievement test. It is a placement test. In other words, you have students coming to your school, and you want to figure out, where do we place them? Will they blend? Will they be somewhat aligned with our curriculum? Yes?
It does have some value if you take it annually.
Yes.
Whether they're keeping pace.
That's right. There is some value there. I agree. If you're giving it from year to year, they should be progressing, you know, 1 year's level. And so in that respect, it does help. But it does not have that third-party dimension that I really highly value. You won't get this kind of result back. You won't get something that's understood by people who maybe ought to, might concern themselves with putting their nose into our program in the way that they're not doing right now. Yes.
So when a student changes levels, like level 3, level 4, does that skew his results at all in the test?
No. It doesn't matter what level you take. This is seamless, I guess we would say. The results, the data would be seamless. Great question. Yes.
So right with that question, let's say you have a struggling student that's in fifth grade, but they're doing some fourth grade work. What should you write on the achievement test?
As far as what should you write on as far as what grade they're in?
Yeah, what grade?
I don't think it really matters. X would work. That's really handy to know algebra. Right. How many donuts did you eat? X, yeah. What grade are they in? X. Yes. I do not. Nope. The only one that I have experience with is this. Right. And so maybe I'm unqualified to say much about any other test. All right, I think that's where we quit then. Again, I would say that achievement tests work well. If a student applies himself throughout the year, well, the achievement test will show that. The converse is also true. So student performance will be appraised, but achievement tests can also help appraise teacher performance. So whether we're teachers or whether we're students, let's all apply ourselves so that we can, whatever our work is, we can be workmen that don't need to be ashamed.